Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-hosts.
Warning you too.
Zysek.
Talk again, right. Dan. Say something intellectual.
Oops.
Yep, I can hear you.
Welcome to the 278th episode. My name is Warning You Too. We have us today, Imagine.
Your door is ajar. Your door is ajar.
That was hilarious. I don't know where that came from, but Anthony, otherwise known as Zysek.
I don't know.
We've left you speechless.
Dan Q.
Showering you with all that you deserve.
And Makalua.
Your door is a jar of peanut butter?
There was patches, including Macedonia and Persia, but we'll deal with those two in a bit. Mm-hmm. But there was an actual patch.
Yep, for Civ 6. Just PC players, of course, because PC yes. players. Master Race, yep. Mm-hmm.
Mac and Linux will get the patch soon enough. Probably next year.
Probably.
Well, that's our normal cynicism, but they've actually been pretty good so far this time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the how early does 2K hand the files over, and then how long does it take for them to do some XML tweaks?
What's changed in the background, too, so...
Yeah, it's how deep do they have to go down the rabbit hole to make changes.
Yeah, the staggering between has been much better so far with Civ 6 than it ever was with Civ 5. Not that that would be that difficult.
Yeah.
We acknowledge it.
Although I'm guessing at the high speed that they're kicking out patches in DLC that, yeah, that's going to cause some problems. All right, of the actual balance changes, swordsmen got buffed up to 36 combat strength. Apparently bomber units are now more effective against cities. Okay.
I think they were pretty effective before, but sure, why not?
Yeah. They added a future civic to the end of the civic tree finally. Woo! Aussies got the nerf hammer. They now get +1 for charming and +3 for breathtaking appeals that are for their affected districts for them. Used to be +2, +4. So yes, they trimmed off a little of that free adjacency bump to compensate for the harbor boost above. And the above harbor boost was the fact that harbors now give major adjacency bonuses with city center. Yay, a little boost to the harbor being next to your city on the coast. And then, of course, with the lighthouse, all coast tiles get food. And with the seaport, all coast tiles get +2 more gold. And frankly, that's just the wrong direction to go with those. But it is good that they chose to boost the harbor because it was, I don't know, for me, the harbor was halfway between an economic district and a encampment style district or utility district. And it wasn't really good at either. And still really is not good at all when it comes to building ships, even though it's the only thing that can build ships for at least a boost to it anyways, because the seaport really needs adjacency bonus to give production. Without a high adjacency bonus, this seaport basically gives you nothing for building ships. So that's partly why the boost for the city center is a good thing, because then seaports now provide more production that way. But I would still prefer to see the harbor get adjacency bonuses to boost that seaport, or they have to rethink it when it comes to production of naval units. It's either going to be an economic building set, or it's going to be a encampment-style building set. I'd prefer it to be the encampment-style, because we already have other stuff. But then again, this could be a great place for things like the encampment barracks versus stable setup. This would be great. You could have a set line of buildings that are for economic, or a line of buildings that really help you build naval units. Well, you might have a bunch of harbors all over England. Not all of them are kicking out ships. Some of them are doing economic and trade and things.
Although, speaking of England, if you are England, yeah. You have the Royal Navy Dockyard, and it now provides +1 trade route capacity, even if the city already has a commercial hub.
So they had to nerf trade routes down so that you only get one for either a commercial hub or a harbor, so that they could reboost naval dockyards. Yay! And the funny part is the in the patch notes, this makes it more useful, even when England builds it on its home continent.
Oh, and the major adjacency bonus of the city center for harbor is +2 gold. And you mentioned encampments earlier. Damage now remains on city and encampments when a city is traded.
Does that count as conquered? That's the more important part. Because it's really annoying when people have civil engineering that you conquer a city and instantly 200 strength walls just pop up. Like, you haven't even decided whether to keep the place, but you have 200 strength walls. So have fun trying to retake that.
Well, I think what the people are saying in the city that you just conquered is, look, don't raise us. We fixed the walls for you.
No. Navally, the +2 gold coast tiles is too much gold in a system that already has way too much gold. Could have been better. It could have been different.
And given the strength of the commercial hub, we don't need the harbors.
Yeah, it's not even the commercial hub. It's commercial hub, trade routes. Like, you can get +9, +10 gold at the beginning of the game with a trade route. And gold is still considered as a 2x multiple of production. City states, you get 4 gold instead of 2, like everything else, for yields. Gold took over, by far, over production.
I envision the harbor being the naval equivalent of an encampment.
Yeah, that's my belief.
Quite frankly, a lot of the adjacency bonuses that we're getting from a harbor right now that are gold-related, I'm not saying switch everyone over them to production, but let's look at making it more production-based, those adjacency bonuses, rather than gold.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the whole, like, seaport gives production from the adjacency bonus. That'd be nice. Partly, it also is rough on the harbor economically because there's not a single maritime city-state out there, so nothing bumps it. Whereas, you know, you meet 5, 6 commercial city-states out there, get 3 envoys in each, there you go. Your commerce, every single commerce hub in your empire is, like, just booting out the cash.
I mean, certainly if you're finding yourself settling on the coast and you're looking for production, the Pantheon that gives you +1 production from resources in the sea is
That's
great.
That's always nice.
But, of course, that can only go to one person, one civ, in a particular game. And that's an issue. And then we could take, for example, the shipyard and just have that, rather than focusing on, say, some absolute production, for naval units, have it just be a percentage modifier on top of all of the base yields that you're getting from the harbor, plus any other terrain that you have around you, like mines, for example, quarries, etc. There needs to be more production.
Yeah, or maybe give harbor a superior +5, like the Holy Saint one, if there's an industrial district next to the harbor.
That's a good point.
Because then that would give like a huge bump to the seaport. And then you say, this is my production naval place.
Yep, and then just adds more about, okay, where am I
location,
placing?
Location, location, location.
Yeah, where am I placing this particular district, which was part of the whole deconstructing the city center in the first place.
Yep. It also means that, oh, maybe this industrial district, oh no, I want to build naval units from it, so I don't want to put it, this industrial district, over there deep inland so that it affects other cities. I need to actually put it right on the coast. It's a trade-off.
Elsewise, from balance changes, you mentioned capturing cities earlier. Speaking of capturing things.
Yep. Siege units with a bonus movement, i.e. from Great Generals or Persia's Surprise War.
Surprise!
The war! It still shoot after moving as long as they still have 2 movement points. So instead of being stuck like, I've got 3 movement points, but I moved 1. Oops. Now you can still shoot again.
I looked at that initially and I went, you mean that's a bug fix?
Yeah, basically.
Why is this under a balance change? What?
Yeah, sometimes they randomize where they put things. And they adjusted their warmonger penalties for diplomatic status. They say for diplomatic status, but it's not quite diplomatic status. I mean, this doesn't affect people like you, then they're okay. No, that doesn't happen. People dislike your target, i.e. been denounced, you get less warmongering penalty. If people are at war with them, you get even more less. So 20% and 40%, respectively. It's good. But more importantly, they also adjusted the warmonger penalties for city pop. So effectively, if you run over a putsy little one pop city that some jerk dropped right on your border and you just wanted to cleanse it, you won't get as much warmonger penalty for it because it's tiny compared to the average size of a city in-game. Although it really hasn't affected some of the other problems with it. You still get egregious warmonger penalty just for declaring war in the Renaissance. Well, heavy for a formal war, egregious for a surprise war. It's already at that point gone goofy. So that whole thing is still crap.
Certainly it's making me pay a little more attention to Cassius Belli. But the Cassius Belli should not about not taking necessarily a penalty that I would say from a formal war or surprise war a little later on. But that's what I'm thinking about is, you know what, I'm actually going to delay this for that specific region because of how egregious it is, and in some cases it's particularly annoying if, I'm sorry, you're calling me a warmonger, but you're already at war with that guy. Or...
Yeah, that too.
Or, they actually declared on me, so...
Yeah, so suck it.
Like, I could understand to some degree if it's, okay, they declare war on you, then maybe at some point it's, okay, you've made your point, you've taken a couple of cities, I don't know why you're still going after them, particularly if that civilization has a good relationship with the civ that you're now raffle stomping. But immediately, as soon as you take that first city, it's, hey, you're a warmonger. It's, no, I'm sending them a message because, you know, I would actually like to get peace with this individual, but they're not going to make peace yet until I do something. And now you're mad at me for effectively defending myself offensively. And it's ridiculous, especially when it's a chain. You're a warmonger, you're a warmonger, you're a warmonger. And there's no consideration for, but what was your current status or relationship with that civilization, even if you had some kind of relationship with it? It's like, oh, so, come on.
So why not my, like, bestest friend who's almost willing to make friendship? Why don't they get even more of a reduction in penalty? Like, we like you. We really like you. Oh, those guys declared war on you. What are you doing burning down one of their cities? What? Yeah, no, this is what you do.
Yeah, I mean, can you sort that out? I mean, hello.
Yeah, like, they forward settled me and declared war on me. Yeah, I'm going to burn it down. Guess what? The AI does that too.
They forward settled me, accused me of forward settling them, and then declared war on me. Yeah, I'm burning that.
Yep. That needs a bit of an overhaul. I mean, I'm fine with warmonger penalties for declaring war up to the Renaissance being the basis of the surprise and formal wars, but the scaling needs to go down again. Basically, surprise and formal war needs to be the core two options into the Renaissance until you actually have access to CBs. Once you have catches bellies, then the cost for warmongering the penalties should go up. Because if somebody doesn't have even the concept of what a CB is, they should not be giving a damn if you didn't use one. Like, I don't understand this legal, ethical thing that the world has come up with. Because I'm back here in the medieval era, and we still just declare war on people because it should actually be related to that, not just, well, you're in the Renaissance, therefore, agrarious! Especially if you don't even have the CB for it. Like, if you don't have the civic that gives you the CBs, you just didn't care about that.
I mean, so the other choice, of course, would be to make the Cassius Belli options available earlier on.
Earlier. But then that would be non-historical. The whole war thing and all that stuff, that didn't show up till much, much later. And people declared wars constantly and didn't hate each other for the next 10 centuries just because they were surprised by being at war.
Yeah, I'm good where the Cassius Belli system is, regardless of whether or not it would be historical to make it available earlier in the civic tree. But as we're saying, you adjusted warmonger penalties, but again, you guys didn't go far enough.
Yeah, it needs to go deeper. Deeper. Needs to not be a human-based, oh, I declared war, therefore everybody's going to hate me forever. So much for diplomacy system. In the realm of AI tuning, AIs will now build multiple neighborhoods. Okay, that's good.
My favorite is increased AI's desire to repair pillaged districts and buildings.
Yeah.
Oh, instead of sitting there letting half their city stay ruined, and then you walk the city and going, why didn't you repair any of this, you idiot? One turn to repair. What are you thinking?
Especially walls. Seriously.
That one especially. Why would you not? You want me to stay out, right?
They said make it easier to meet the positive side of the environmentalist agenda. So probably gave you a little bit more of a boost. Make it a little safer. And on the note of agendas, because that's really what that pack. There's still a few out there that are poor. They need a little bit more of a fudgy space. Like Monty. Monty, if you have no luxuries, he'll be all thrilled with you. The moment you hook up one single luxury, if he doesn't have that one single luxury, instantly you're a target. Even if he's got five luxuries already, literally Monty will pop up and interrupt your turn because you hooked it up. He could least wait for his own freaking turn.
Like, no, you have a shiny, I don't.
Congo, it's like, so, you founded a religion last turn. Yeah, I hate you because we don't have your religion.
Or
they're on the opposite side of the world. It takes like 40 turns to actually get a missionary over there.
It's like, hey, Congo, seriously, unless you've invented teleportation, you're just going to have to sit on your hands and wait.
I spent great people points to get this. For me to bring my religion to you, I need faith. I've currently got none. Can you shut up now? That should get like a 10-turn delay for Congo.
Yeah, that delay scaling like that on game speed too, sure.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, AI should now generally accept embassies when neutral and reject when unfriendly. That's a load of crock. That literally did not work. We've got people who are listed as neutral, and they still say no.
You know how you get an embassy? You go at war with them, and then you declare peace, and then that same turn, they will gladly accept your embassy or your delegation if they missed it before.
Yep, exactly.
It's like, pardon?
And you know the worst part about that, not accepting the embassy when neutral, is that they will turn around and ask you to be their friend, declared friend, the next turn. I don't want your embassy because I don't like you enough. Oh, hey, want to be friends?
Yeah, I generally just let the AI do it right now.
Or in some cases, they were like, hey, will you allow us to establish an embassy in your capital? Sure you can. Hey, can I get what? No.
Yeah.
But it's it's the same. Pardon? What just happened in this fraction of a turn?
They established an embassy and did not like what they saw.
Yeah, exactly.
I've had it in one turn where they say, you're doing a wonderful job keeping your people happy. Nice job. And then the next turn, I get denounced. I'm like, how can you turn from liking me all of a sudden to next turn hating me? I don't get it.
Well, you see, you're contributing to their self-loathing because your people like you and they don't like them. So therefore, you can't have nice things because they can't have nice things.
Oh.
Or they like your pie pop cities and would like to have them. If they have two agendas, and you're doing one really well, but you're doing the other one badly, just like Warning says, they'll praise you for the one and then instantly denounce you for the other. Instead of going, okay, I kind of like you for this, but you're doing bad on that, so I'm not going to denounce you. It's just, we're going to average it out. There's just more work to be done on the diplomacy side with those agendas.
Yeah, it's like it's going through its calculations, and it calculates the I hate you before the I like you or something.
Or both at the same time, and it's like, okay, I'll do both.
And to that end, in terms of the interaction, the ability for the AI to do certain things, you have to be able to do certain things in response. It's like, hey, you just complimented me. I would like to compliment you back, because I would like a positive diplomatic modifier. Oh, wait, I can't do that? Oh.
Or, oh my god, give me your freaking religion. Where's that button? Where's that button that says, hey, you, give me your religion?
In turn contact. You're going to superimpose this as well, so it is adding to my turn time, which maybe in a single-player situation isn't as potentially extreme as in an MP.
But in multiplayer,
My god, if you have Monty in multiplayer...
Escape.
You're at war with somebody doing unit micro in the middle of a war, and then all of a sudden an AI pops up for one player? Yeah, that's just some rage for you.
And on top of it, it's, hey, I'm going to delay the game to tell you, you suck. And you cannot respond. There is no action that you can take. You just have to take it. I mean, it should be an option that you say nothing, but it's like, you know, like, hey, I denounce you now for this. Or, hey, leave those city-states to me. Okay.
No.
Some kind of response that I can give.
There could be a nice... I mean, you could add a little response to their agenda item commentary. Like, leave those city-states to me. And your response is, okay. And then, you know, you get a little diplo bump with Germany. And especially if you don't break it. Like if you say, I promise to leave these city-states alone because that's the ones you want. Okay, I agree. Small diplomatic fire. Or I tell you to go screw yourself and bigger negative multiplier.
I was playing Macedon a little bit earlier and I had an instance where Vicky was like, you have too many troops near my border. And I was like, okay, open borders. Sound good? Great. And so I was moving troops through her borders with open borders now. To get to China, and she got aint denounced me for not moving troops away from her border.
Oh, like, for not keeping your promise.
Great.
The thing. Open
so
borders should
not
override
talking to
those
each
kind
other.
Of problems.
Yeah, it's obviously a bug, but it's just kind of like...
Hilarious. I moved them away from your borders. I just moved them into your borders. I'm going towards the city of your soup. I'm not near your border. Right?
I've seen instances where it's like, hey, your troops are... massing near my borders, and it's so often that I choose the ignore. I love the ignore option, not because I just want to ignore it, but because I don't want to get what I effectively call luck screwed over saying, fine, I'll move my troops away, and then one turn, like maybe a scout is on automate or something, and it gets within one hex of the border, and you get notified, so you broke your promise.
Yeah, scouts should not count as troops for that. Seriously. All by itself, and there's no other units near it? Ignore that.
Or at some point in the game, even if it's, oh, I'm sorry, my lone pikeman just happened to go by there. I mean, yes, okay, it's troops, but in the context, is it really that concerning? Do you have no military units, and are your city defensive strength so poor that you're concerned that this one pikeman is going to be able to wrongful stop through your empire? I mean, anything's possible. But it's just so often, it's just, hey, you broke your promise.
The troop thing and the promising should be based on relative combat strength of it. It should be able to calculate, okay, you've got 8 units right there in a chunk. That's bad on my border. Versus, you've got 1 unit here, 1 unit there, 1 unit there. None of those things can actually do any damage to me. Ignore it.
Yes, to kind of go along with, yeah, I know I'm stronger than you militaristically, but 95% of my force is on the other side of the world, and you're concerned about this one little unit that I've got beside your border.
That scout.
Even as that pikeman, I can't do anything practically about it right now. So why don't you wait until I move, some, relative also to the strength of that civ and your civ, till I move a sufficient portion, whatever that happens to be, on your borders, then to be actually able to do something about it. Ay, ay, ay.
It'd also be nice to have a screen that shows your current promises. You save, and the next day, you float up a game, and then all of a sudden you violated, like, 3 promises, and you're like, oops.
Yeah. Or trying to remember, okay, so we're in this war, I want this war to end. Has it been enough turns yet? I don't know. Oh, wait, I know that they're the suzerain of this city-state and have been from the beginning, so how many turns until I can declare peace with that city-state? Oh, that would be 6 turns, so it's also going to be 6 turns until I can declare peace with this AI proper. Like, what a workaround I have to figure out that information. Come on.
Otherwise, in the amusing side, minor civs will no longer go after policies that give them extra influence they can never use. Really, your city-states are going for influence policies. Really? Also, why are city-states using policies? They don't need to use policies. They're minor civs. Policies are for the majors, governments. It doesn't matter. Longer term, cool. That could be a thing where minor civs have more influence and stuff. But since they're just handed civics and handed techs, I don't see why they would be worried about policies.
Any culture that they would, for instance, be generating from buildings, from district, I don't know why they would construct that district, but just convert that into production or something like that. Fine, you still got the yield. You don't, you're not going to take that quote-unquote off the map or out of the buildings, but give it to something that those minor civs are actually going to be able to use because it's just wasted effort on their part. But they could be, and in fact, should be doing something else. So again, this is good, but patch didn't go far enough. Bug fixes. And of course, we have to have the requisite additional bug fixes at the end.
Yeah. Melee units can no longer attack embarked units.
Yeah. Woo!
You can no longer throw your units into the water to fight.
Oh, you mean by source that weren't supposed to jump and go after that boat?
Yeah. Pillaged improvements no longer provide Pantheon bonuses. Good job for that. Fixed double counting of appeal from improvements. Some people are guesstimating that that also helps with respect to the mine change from last patch, where mines were supposed to, in theory, only give -1 appeal to tiles next to it, but we're giving 2.
I'm looking for the remove gossip message about actions that you yourself have initiated. Thank you for reminding me that I established a delegation with this other civ.
Can you please clean that out?
That's funny, just told me that I completed a warrior. Well, no, really?
Hey, did you know? Shut up. You are the worst spy ever. Stop watching me. Watch the else.
No wonder we're failing at all these spy actions if you're too busy watching your own civ.
Nope.
Gosh.
Yeah, I'm going to have to roll back some of your salary.
Yep.
I notice we've got a turn counter in the upper right-hand corner. It's like you're at turn out of /250, which still shows up even if you disable score victory.
Yep, that's a new bug.
Yay!
New bug! We tell you how many turns are in the game even when there's no turn limit. Yep.
Woo! Maybe that's just supposed to remind you that, hey, you shouldn't have disabled score victory because it's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. You loser.
Or maybe it's there's a reason you disabled score victory is because you know you can't win in 250 turns. You're weak. Oh. Mm-hmm.
So separated the war and peace notifications into major civs versus city-states. That's kind of nice. You can see if a major civ declared war on a city-state or just declared war without
Except
even looking at it.
We're still getting the, so an unmet player has been defeated, and it was
city-state. Well, you don't know if it's a city-state or not.
No, but usually at a certain point in the game, especially early on, it's like, what civ could that possibly have been at this point? No, it was probably a city-state.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not really sure that should even be a thing, really.
I think when someone's defeated, it should just tell you that that person was defeated. It doesn't matter if they're unmet or not.
Well, no, because that can give you good information like, oh,
the Toronto city-state was defeated by Germany. I know Germany. They're right next to me. Ooh, Toronto's right next to me. I'm going to go liberate
them. Oh, when it says I'm at players defeated, it doesn't say who defeated them.
Yeah.
You just say this person's wiped out. You're like, oh,
I don't see why you're even getting notified. Because, one, you don't know who they are. And, two, if you know Germany and Germany wiped out a city-state that you don't know, then you should probably get that. Like, the Germans wiped out somebody. We don't know who yet, because we haven't met them.
Admittedly, it is true that when you get that notification, if you're wondering, was that a civ proper that I haven't met yet? You could always go to whatever tells you that your ranking for this is 1 out of blah, and you know you started the game on a standard-sized map with 8 civs, and now you only see 7 icons there. Oh, then you know that was a civ proper.
So, yeah.
Well, yeah, we don't need that notification. If I haven't met them yet, how am I going to know that they've been defeated or not? Well, in fact, I might incidentally find that out because I want to know where I'm in my ranking, and you realize, oh, hey, there's only 7 icons on here instead of 8. Oh, I guess someone got wiped out. So sad, too bad for them.
Could be nicer if they only add icons to that, just like the top bar for Diplo, if they only add icons for that as you meet them, and they only rank you versus the ones that you've met.
Yeah, so on a standard-sized map, if you know about yourself and 2 other people, you're the crap one, then you're 3 out of 3.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Oh, and actually, Martin Carpentier in the chat just reminded me of something. You do get the political philosophy boost from unmet player defeated notice.
Oh, yeah.
You meet your third city state that way?
Yeah. I've done that. I've actually done that in game.
Oh, boy.
I just got political philosophy boost. I'm like, wait a minute. I only know 2 city states. Oh, unmet city state got wiped because the notification is sitting there. I'm like, oh, well, that's bad. You just have to sit back and wait for 3 city states to get wiped in. Look, political philosophy! Texan Civics, you now get special ability stars. Instead of having to read the tooltips to find out what the tech or civic just hands you when it comes to, like, +1 food for pastures or 1 free envoy. No, that's separate.
Yeah, adding that to the UI. No, that should fall under the frickin' derp fix heading.
Yep.
There's also 2 new wonders that we have in the game. Apadena Wonder, which is +2 envoys each time you build a wonder in your civilization, including Apanenda itself, also awards 2 great work slots, and the Mausoleum of Halicarnassus, or Halitosis, if you prefer.
See, when I saw that in the video, I thought of Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Halitosis, Steve.
All great admirals use their retirement bonus twice, awards a free great admiral. All great engineers have +1 charge. That's the one that contention in particular, actually. That in and of itself, ooh.
And it comes at Naval Tradition Civic, which is a leaf, and the AIs almost never go there. It's basically a free wonder.
I saw the AI build it, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got it, but only because the AI built it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the problem I have with Appadocia one, the one that comes at Philosophy, is it must be built in your capital, right next to your capital, on the inside ring.
Yes.
By the time it shows up, that inside ring could be filled. And so I don't believe the AI will ever actually build it, because you'd have to overwrite improvements or other districts or leave space for a different district or like that. So it's interesting, but to me it feels like it's a player-only thing.
Yeah.
Though if you're Greece, it'll be great, because then you can zip up to political philosophy with your extra culture, slap down your Acropolis right next to your capital on a hill, and put that right next to it and the city center. And it's like, okay, there's my first wonder. Now let's go wonder spam. Or you can do that with China too. 2 envoys per wonder in your capital. That could add up to a crazy amount of bonuses really quick, even if you're only putting in 3 envoys per city state that you meet.
Macedon was added with Alexander as its leader. Alexander, 2 worlds end, which means cities do not incur war weariness. All military units heal completely when this player captures a city with a world wonder. This is...
Yeah, cities do not incur war weariness. That's worth mentioning a second time.
Yeah, that's...
I was at war... I played Alexander from about turn 50 for 100-something turns and didn't even blink an eye. You just don't experience it anymore. You just let everybody else build wonders and you capture it. Oh, no, hey... It's not just the city, the military unit that captures the city that gets healed. All military units, all over the world. So it's just like, oh hey, a wonder, I can attack everything, I don't have to wait any turns to heal. Yeah, it's a very powerful leader ability if you're going military.
you could just keep killing units and fighting and killing units and fighting and pillaging until the other player gets so much war weariness, all their cities start spawning rebels.
Oh, yeah. You can just, literally, you can yep. wait them out.
That is your core advantage. That is the real advantage of Alex. And let the barbs do the work.
Subcontract to the barbs.
Yep. Once you hand somebody 5 war weariness in each city that they have, they'll love you forever. Of course, at that point, you also want to go for an encampment-based economy. And what you want to do there is just sit back and keep plowing the encampment Great General projects. And of course, get your Hedoroi out there to destroy stuff. Because then you can get, say, the Great General that gives you a free bombard while you're still in classical era stuff.
Oh, my God. And, what walls? That, you don't have walls.
You want a wall? I'll show you a wall. Boom. Oops. Thanks for the free siege. I don't really need the Great General. This is much better.
Yep.
With one bombard, you can walk around the map. And
if you haven't made enough progress with that one bombard early on that you're not already curb stomping the rest of the planet, I mean, come on.
Yep. You have to be careful because crossbows can get really ugly.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
The Hellenistic Fusion. Conquer a city that has a encampment, campus, holy site, or theater, you will get either a Eureka or an Inspiration. A Eureka for encampments and campuses, and an Inspiration for each holy site and theater. So if they have both, you get both. One turn, I conquered 3 cities and got 6. It was great.
Did you already have that achievement, Anthony, where you get those 5 or something in a turn?
I had the Eureka one, but I didn't have the Inspiration one, and I got the Inspiration one. Conquering a city.
So to say, so if you're achievement hunting people and you want to get those pretty quickly,
yeah,
that's enough.
it's the best way to do it. And it plays really well in with their special building, which goes in the encampment, which is the Basilicoi Pietes. It replaces the barracks, gives plus 25% combat experience to all melee, range land units, and one of their special heavy cavalry units they get, which is the Hedoroi, and I'll go into that in a second. Its special thing, other than just for that heavy cavalry, is you gain science equal to 25% of the unit's cost when it is built in the city, for any military unit that is non-civilian, it specifically says. I actually have not tried that with a naval unit, and I should and see, but it sounds like it'll be a naval unit would give science as well if you have the Basilicoi.
Here we've got something else for science. So in addition to your Eurekas for each encampment or campus, by the way, just constructing the military units to go take the cities where you could get these Eureka bonuses, here, have 25% equivalent of that unit production cost in science. Boom.
I will say, having played Macedon, I completely changed up my normal build order when playing Civ, and I V-lined for the Basilicoi. So I had encampments was the first district I built, my first 2 cities. And I was able to maintain the science of the other civilizations until I started attacking them. And then I was just above them. You start pumping out archers and you start pumping out warriors. Around that time, the first 10, 15 turns, you know, you only have about 5 science you're getting. And so that's 10, 15 science every 3 or 4 turns you're getting. So you're basically doubling your science just by building those out.
Powerful Civ.
So if Macedon is one of your competitors on the map, you need to check them into a wall and balance them into a grave. That is the check and balance for Macedon.
Yes,
cannot
exactly.
Cannot allow them to do anything.
If you see Macedon, squish.
Especially if you realize they're all the way over there, and all that's around them are city-states.
In other words, Macedon food.
Either that, and or even just, well, there's lots of territory, but they don't have a lot of cities to take. Yeah, but they can be constructing cities, and again, all the units that they produce in the city that has the barrack replacement, they're going to get science, which is going to allow them to construct even better units, which then also give them a science boost based on its production cost. So they are a major threat to whatever
when I was playing them,
you were going for.
I only had 2 cities when I was just pumping units out of those cities. You have the Hedoroi, which is a unique heavy cavalry unit that replaces the horsemen. It gets an additional plus 5 combat strength when adjacent to a great general, which with your encampments, they will have several while they're attacking you. Then they get plus 5 great general points when killing an enemy unit. If they're wiping out barbarians with those, then it starts with 1 free promotion.
So the free promotion is going to help you go out and kill an enemy unit and get great general points, and then you can get a great general and then get additional combat strength when adjacent to the great general.
Right. They have the Hippopists. something like that. That replaces the swordsman. It gets plus 5 combat strength when besieging districts and receives plus 50% additional support bonus.
Yeah, so you're going after a civ, and it's like, oh, there's that encampment, and I'm going to have to kind of go in the vicinity of it in order to be able to take the city for whatever combination of reasons. Like, oh, train doesn't really allow me to get around the other side. So, yeah, let's neuter that encampment, or at least keep it occupied so I can have other units doing something. So, yeah, I'll take the additional combat strength. I mean, that's the district that I think you're particularly attacking, obviously.
Yeah. There's a few things about Alex. One, there are exactly, what, 2 great generals in the classical era, and you only ever see one, generally, depending on game speed, of course. If you're in marathon speed, you might see more. It'll jump to the medieval era, because everybody will be in the medieval era. So if Alex doesn't get a classical era great general, neither of his unique units are going to get a boost from the great general. Yes, the Heteroi will get a boost from any old great general, so that covers over that problem. But the actual classical era great general, if Alex doesn't get it, he's missing a lot.
Oh, I agree with that.
So all you have to do is screw him out of that, and all of a sudden he's weaker. The Heteroi also needs a great general to be next to it to get its bonuses. So if it's not, if he can't get a great general, he's not getting his unique unit boosted. And
but effectively, he's still getting the bonus for killing units, and he already starts with 1 additional promotion. So
Well, the first promotion for a heavy cav unit does okay stuff. The heavy cav line does not get, oh my god, promotion on the first one. It's just a small bump. And usually it's like barding, which is a very small version of anti-ranged defense compared to, say, the sword, which has much better anti-range defense as the first one. The other thing is, if Alex doesn't conquer a city with those particular 4 districts for the boost, then he doesn't get that either. And then all of a sudden, he's stuck with some classical era stuff that the moment you hit medieval era base flying units are no longer dangerous. At that point, he's got nothing. Now, does that translate to good MP player stuff? No. People already realized Archer Rush will wipe out Alex. People let Alex in multiplayer. They'd rather have Alex in multiplayer than Australia.
Yeah, I was going to say, at least it might get banned.
It's the, oh my god, on paper, this should be awesome. But there's things that need to change for that to work well. Like, maybe don't let people speed through to medieval that quickly. How about having an ancient / classical era great general for 2?
Oh boy, oh boy. Persia is finally added to Civ 6. It should have been there from the beginning, perhaps, but it's now there, and it's a very powerful Civ as well. It has the Immortals as its unique unit, replaces the Swordsman with ranged abilities. Build that with a Blitzkrieg-like ability, the Fall of Babylon, which gives you 2 extra movements for 10 turns, and you got a civilization that can quickly overrun another civilization or do it a lot of damage. And plus the ability that you can actually take cities and not suffer a penalty for yields, it quickly becomes a civilization that can not only perform militarily, but also economically, plus tied to a number of civics, political philosophy, which gives it the ability to build satrapies, which are really like provinces for internal trade, plus gold, plus culture. Then when you get early empires, you can get a new unique improvement the builders can do called Perdazis. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. Add Diplo services to that further down the road. I really like Cyrus. I really like the abilities it's given in the game. The souped-up gardens, the Perdizis. It's a great civ.
One thing to note about the Immortal. Would you like to capture the city? Yeah. No. With an Immortal, you're not.
Nope.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, it's a ranged unit. Oh. So because it has a ranged attack, you can't do a melee thing. Remember the Galleas in Civ 5?
Yeah.
Where it could do range, but it couldn't actually attack, even though it was a melee unit? Yeah. They eventually fixed it, but this might be the new Galleas. In theory, a sword replacement, and therefore should be able to melee attack is on top of ranged attack.
It ranged attack, but it's not like, oh, okay, so it could ranged attack, so I don't need siege, I don't need an archer, I don't need a crossbow. Of course, it depends on the strength of the city that's going after and what kind of fortifications it has, but yeah, you probably do. I mean, you don't want it to be a situation where, okay, the Immortal can do everything, but it's not at that point yet, and it shouldn't be, and the fact that it can't take a city is kind of like,
The Immortals should be able to take down walls.
Just like archers should not be able to take down walls. How about that?
Oh, well, there is that. But still, the Immortals should be able to take the city.
Yeah, it's, I mean, ranged units should be able to take cities if there's no walls or something. Because literally all you're doing is walking in going, mine.
That ranged attack ability is not a substitute for an otherwise ranged unit when going after a city, or most cities that you're going to be encountering at the time that an Immortal appears.
So trapeze gives the plus one trade route capacity with political philosophy, and all trade routes receive plus two gold and plus one culture for routes between your own cities.
Yeah, that's nothing. That's the smallest bonus, really.
Well, it basically means you don't ever have to do external trade route. Especially if you use the economic policies for trade, then you've got plus four gold per trade route, and you've got two or three.
Right, because you've got the social policy that gives you plus two gold for your trade routes, yes.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
It's the added trade route capacity at political philosophy.
One.
And it gets me that's even nothing. More... No, that's not nothing. No, that's if a political philosophy, if you've only got one or two trade routes, and now I've added another trade route, you're now at two or three trade routes. I just increased my trade route capacity by a third.
Yeah, if each of your cities drops the commerce district, then you've increased it by four or more. So, yeah.
You get to political philosophy, it's like having another commercial hub.
Yeah.
For the trade route capacity, all not internal, everything else that you can get from a commercial hub.
Yeah.
You're sending them all from your external cities, your non-capital cities, to your capital. Thus, you're getting a food and two, maybe three, production bonus at that time. So, it really helps getting your satellite cities going and producing. Plus, you get the gold bonus that you normally get from sending Alcwell inside.
And you can build more roads, which roads for Satrapies start one level more advanced than usual.
Yeah, that's more of an annoyance than anything.
Why is that?
The annoyance is more because of how they did the road speed adjustments. At least in Civ 5, the road speed increases were by 0.3 for the first one. So if you have two movement, you can go three hexes. Basically, the math worked out that you could go further the first time you get a speed bump. In this, you can't. If you have a two-move unit, you will move exactly two hexes down the road, whether you started in the ancient, classical, or medieval eras or whatever. The very first bump is down to 0.75 movement per square, which means that you still move two, but you're left with half a movement point. So now it's an annoyance. Before, you would move, it would go to the next unit. Now you move, and you have half a movement point left, and it's still asking you to do something with that unit.
And you're like, I can't game.
I mean, if it's a ranged unit, then you can still shoot with half a movement point.
Yep.
Which is bad, because that basically gives ranged units more stuff. Makes them stronger again, and they don't need to be stronger. Eventually, it gets down to 0.5, in which case, then you can move further, but it's just annoying. And for those who say, okay, well, Cyrus gets the plus two movement points for 10 turns, which means you can use more. Great, you can go from two movement to four movement, and now you can move one extra hex using that extra half, because you'd have half from two and half from another two. So you move four and then a fifth one. But then you're still, amusingly, left with 0.25 of a movement point after that last move. And you still have to sit there and hit the do nothing button.
Getting the bonus only off for declaring a surprise war is kind of limiting.
I like it. It's okay. It's a game style. Yeah.
So the only thing we haven't really talked about now is Pardeza. Good or bad or indifferent?
I like it. Again, this is the internalizing the gold production, so you don't have to worry about external stuff as much. So even just the straight up plus three gold, the boost for being next to the city center to me is decent. Since they can't be next to each other, you can get three of them around the city center, and then you slot in your districts between them. Therefore, each district affects two.
Commercial hub is one of those, and that's another plus one gold.
Yeah, and especially for the commercial hub, if you want it next to your city center anyways, if you can.
Yep.
So then, yeah, you're just given nice little boosts. They're connected to the city center. You just need a different district further out to give a district adjacency bonuses for a little bit more. But yeah, like I can see a setup where you have your city center in the middle, your three improvements, and then you slot in to the other three slots, the districts.
For episode 267 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Mad Jin, Martin Alvito, and Stormtrooper 412.
Interview with Christopher Tin, who did Baba Yetu for Civ 4. Well, he's back, and obviously we all know he's doing the Civ 6 theme. And the song is called Sogno di Volare, otherwise known as Dream of Flight. Mostly in the interview, he talks about process, of how he came up to it, how he was late to the party. No one asked him to do it till like the games are done, and he's like, "Oh no, I've only got 10 weeks," or something like that.
I was about to say, I don't know where you got 10 from, but it was some minimal number, yeah.
He didn't have very much time to actually do it. So he just, like, ripped it off. He's like, boom, there you go, song done.
I don't see when you're talking about someone doing a song and ripping it off. That's some legal connotations here.
Yeah, you didn't rip it off like that.
Lawsuit.
The only thing it comes down to, really, from this, because, I mean, he just talked about Babiette, this song. They played various bits of the First Look videos in the background. Other than that, it's just a question of, will he get a Grammy for this one, too?
I think we all look forward to Tin coming back for Civilization 8. See, he only does the even-numbered civs.
Well, they're the good ones, right?
Civilization 8 and, say, 2027.
All right.
He describes this theme as Eurocentric, whereas compared to the previous theme for Civilization 4 was Africa-centric. It's like, okay, well, seeing as how the Africa-centric, it was the Lord's Prayer in Swahili, and then this song is titled after the Dream of Flight, which is in Italian. Yeah, okay, guess so. I wouldn't call it centric. I mean, I get what he's going for, but of course, some people are like, oh, it's Eurocentric, just like the rest of the game. Ugh. It's like, oh, okay, guys.
That's not really what he meant.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, this is more Italian-style music, which is roughly, he said it was more Italian-inspired style.
Yep. And he knew he was onto something with the Civ 6 theme, just like any piece of his music, because his wife actually took an interest in what he was doing. I'm paraphrasing slightly, but only slightly, yeah. I think.
I was waiting when would someone mention that.
Yeah, I found it interesting that his creative process is basically throw things at the wall until something sticks.
I always thought that's the only way to make things work, actually.
Music and a game are both highly mathematical things, right? But because of the different ways in which the rules work, you can get away with the throwing things at the wall process.
Episode 276 with Dan Q, Makalua, the main team, Majin, and T Pangolin.
A scout goes out, spends his entire life out in the world.
I venture into the great unknown, and I will return with geographical knowledge, which we will finally use to overcome Gilgamesh and his Sumerian armies.
And then comes back and somebody else has conquered them.
Published by Door Monster, formerly White Lightning NQ, back on the 15th of February. Yeah, over 140,000 views as of this recording. That's 40,000 more over the last couple of weeks. A scout returns home after a long journey around the world.
Historically been really good at actually understanding what people connect to inside of a game. So, for example, if they talk about City Skylines versus like SimCity or whatever, there's a lot of actual decent commentary inside of what they're doing.
I need to get to the Capitol building so I can deliver my completed map of the world.
Well, we've already mapped everything.
They had other funny lines, like...
When I left, we were almost done building a landlocked version of Seahinge. Is that done? Where is it?
Landlocked version.
Oh yeah, no, that got scraps. Yeah, China built one first.
What? Why would anybody tear down 100 years of progress just because somebody else did it first?
Yeah.
Wrecked.
I stumbled on camps
full of crazy murderous barbarians who then chased me into other barbarian camps.
Yeah, that sucks.
I'm not done. I then realized that I had missed several parts of the map and I had to go back and outrun the same barbarians again.
Yeah, we finally got all the maps. They're like, no, we had satellites. It's all good.
Russia. Yeah, they're way up north. We had some trouble finding him, but another scout got to it eventually.
Well, great!
Or is this just like...
How long did it take us to finally beat Sumeria?
So, you're a Greek scout?
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
This is a Sumerian city now, isn't it?
Norwegian.
What?
I was like, yeah. You know, I scout started a war with Norway because he cut through the lands.
I may have started a war with Norway.
Oh, was that you?
Seeing as how we've been talking all about Civilization VI for some reason, as if this didn't apply to us already, 1,000 clues. You've played too much Civilization VI. You've had these 1,000 clues thread on CFC for Civilization V and Civilization before that, and at least Matt and Mackie should be able to pick up on why I in particular wanted to discuss this topic.
Because it's a list, even though it's not a top 10, but it's a list.
It's a list, and I made a top 10 out of all the clues that are currently...
We should have known.
It's been a while. I know I haven't been living up to my contractual obligations. So, 1,000 clues. You've been played two Civ 6. They're not up to 1,000 clues yet. I think they're pushing near 200. But here are the 10 that I picked out, from number 10 to number 1. You check the forums multiple times a day, hoping for info on the next DLC patch. Coming from Timothy001. You believe the sun sets and rises across the entire planet at the same time. Nicholson.
Letter.
And I absolutely, and I love that feature in Civilization VI, the time of day cycling. From Sonic Mist, lightning bolts signify a theological combat instead of a weather disturbance.
That's not a thunderstorm, they're just having some combat out there, guys.
Although, quite frankly, I think they could signify both. I don't know why it has to be mutually exclusive, but sure. You refer to your spouse as your alternate leader, from CivCube. I think it's your spouse that's referring to you as their ultimate leader, but anyway. God of Kings, you believe that toys, jeans, cosmetics, and perfumes are only used in 4 cities within each of the civs that have respective manufactured goods, and no other place has them. Yep, that's true. Mm-hmm. Exclusive. From Crod, at number 5, you see a recreational vehicle, and you'll wonder when they'll found a new city.
Okay, I can kind of see that, because the RVs are cute.
Beep, beep. From Stignafulia, you tell your wife that it's against your agenda to do household chores, and she settles you on a distant continent. Oh, yeah. John C. Nunn at number 3. You criticize the real-life locations of the districts of the city in which you live. You didn't get the adjacency bonus. If only you had placed it here. Aww. Why isn't the market next to the city hall? Dang it. Number 2 from D.C. Perry. That's P-A-R-R-Y. Whenever you come to even a slight incline, you stop. Wait a minute. And then walk up to it next turn. That's true, the move it rules. And number 1, 1,000 clues that you played too much Civilization 6, from Miravelix. You read this thread.
You make a top 10 list out of this thread.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
I don't know whether anybody else on this call here has suffered this, but I have had dreams about Civ 6, and it's woken me up like a nightmare, because I haven't moved my units properly, or I didn't get enough units at the gate. I've actually had it affect my subconscious mind.
I think we've all dreamt about Civilization at some point, although most of my dreams about Civilization are about our multiplayer games. I am me playing the game. I don't find myself like immersed in the game as a unit being controlled, all of that. Now, that would be a nightmare.
You're that guy. I just didn't have to sacrifice and draw the fire.
No, I always thought our multiplayer games were so intellectual.
Do we have Steve? To be called Codecast? Yeah.
Poor Matt and Mackie and no one listening to the live stream. Has any idea why that's amusing? We were testing audio levels, and Steve tells me, say something intellectual, because my mic volume was low, so I went, boops. Whenever you're out in the real world, ladies and gentlemen, and someone says intellectual to you, just say boops, and see how the conversation goes.
They will be very, 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 very confused.
Yes, that's exactly it. Instead of saying out loud outro time question mark, Anthony felt the need to type that in Skype. Listen to you.
Is it time for the outro?
I've never been here before. Now. You know, whatever. So this has been Polycast 278 with Dan Q.
No, you were right the first time. This is the only podcast, and it was the 278th episode of
it. How long have you been doing this? 278 is amazing, by the way.
Thank you, yep.
11 and a half years, something like that, right?
Nearly.
Mackie, I think you should say it.
Yeah, Mackie knows exactly what her actual comment is going to be. Excellent.
No, come on.
Fine, don't use the medical term for it. Use, colloquialism. That's fine.
Dan?
Mad Jin?
Bye-bye, everybody.
Makulua?
I can't do it.
Warning you too.
Thanks for all the fish.
And me, Zytek. Yeah, it's a anagram of my last name.
Oh, speaking of intellectual.
Boobs.
Boobs.
From now on, Dan, whenever the word intellectual comes up, not that it does very often, I'm going to respond. Boobs.
Mackie's going to love this. Hey, Mackie.
Hello.
Mackie.
Mackie saw already. Impressive.
You guys are infinitely amused by that for some reason.
It's just that historically that has prompted you to suddenly appear on more than one occasion. So you really have only yourself to blame.
We know the space program is awesome, but Wonders of the World should cost more.
You know, I'm listening to this. I just realized the AI behaves very much like my wife.
Oh, Steve.
She instantly hates and dislikes me all of the, and loves me all at the same time. But anyway.
There you go. No, there's the secret to Civilization VI AI design modeled after Steve's wife.
Yeah.
Or spouses everywhere.
Hate to give credit to Mad Jin, but I'm going to give credit to Mad Jin because I know he talked about it. I know. I suck because I'm giving you credit. I'm going to remember this, and I'm going to quote you a lot for that now. Don't give Mad Jin credit on this show. Understood. Going forward, I got that.
All right. So, hey, Mackie.
What?
Mackie fan wanted to say hello.
Oh, sorry.
Mackie has fans. And not all low hot air.
Going to cut this from post-production. # Okay, I'm a terrible, terrible person. And I'm going to hell.
I guarantee you that's going to be cut.
Oh, somebody's playing the drums.
What? Oops. Oh.
Who the hell is ringing my doorbell? Do you know what time it is?
Speaking of the chat, I'm just reading here. I was like, where did the stream end today? Dino's like, after everyone said bye. Mackie balls. Oh, Mackie's disappointed that it ended in bye?
No, like that's what I was trying to say, but I couldn't.
Oh.
I could type it, apparently.
You could have said the sequence just looks like you said that in response to Dino.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I figured one of you would look in there and know what that was, so.
It was a lawn aerator service geared to ring my doorbell at 9:30 in the morning, Saturday.
So, Anthony, would you be willing to come back on the show?
Yeah, that'd be good. Be fun.
Ooh, there wasn't even a hesitation there. I question your diligence now. And if I don't like it ultimately, then I'll just cut it in post. No worries.
The editor's favorite threat.
Record date April 1st, 2017.
Civ6 parody clips, copyright Door Monster. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.